Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Welcome to the show, Jordan. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. How can I not have one of my friends?
Love it.
All right. So as always, I like to start off talking about how I met my guest. And for us, it was Rio. Except for me, everything is kind of a blur. So I don't remember the fine details of everything.
But I do remember connecting, especially well with the fencing team. It's like you guys had a great vibe. You, Daryl, Miles, like all of those guys had a very cool vibe. And even like in the past, like because of knowing Daryl, like spending time at the OTC, I've got a chance to meet like Eli, Molly, all of these amazing athletes. I'm like, damn, I really like the fencing team. Like you guys are all so different.
Completely different.
So different. And but that varying degree of character like is really interesting. It's, in wrestling, you don't really have that.
Interesting.
Very similar.
Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I think because most wrestlers are working class. We all come from like the same.
Oh, school, that makes sense.
Demographic, small towns, even schools in the Midwest. Like you guys grew up in the city. It's a little more prestigious sport. Like the schools that you go to are a little different. So your experiences and how you view the world are a little different. A little more hip.
But it's also different. Like there are people that are from the upper class. And then there's people that are not in the work like upper class. Like I struggled as a kid, whatever, in money, but there's people that are like filthy rich doing this sport, so that probably also like brings an element into it.
Still a certain level of sophistication.
Yeah,
all sensors have, no matter where you're from.
Yeah,
it's just a very classy sport.
Yeah,
I like wrestling is like it's just a grind, it's a battle. I can't read or write, but I can wrestle.
Right.
Know, it's different.
Yeah, that's true. It is more of a thinking sport and strategy and all that stuff. So that definitely, yeah, it is different. Interesting. I never really asked about like what someone thought of like the fencing community on the outside. So it's interesting to really hear that.
Yeah, you guys are cool.
Well, I'm glad you think that. I just remember everybody talking about meeting you, and I know you from Jersey because I remember like telling somebody I qualified. They're like, "Oh my God, do you know Jordan Burroughs?" I was like, "No, I never met him." Whatever. So then when I heard they were all talking to you, I was like, "What? How am I not running into the Jerseyan?"
Yeah, we're good. I love spending time. We happen to like cool. We were training at the same facility. I
think yeah.
Both at Lemire, we were catching settles back and forth between there and Village. So we got to connect a few days. It was fun.
So that's, yep. So it's, I love that we were able to connect and stay friends through all the years.
Yes.
And then before we get into the bulk of this whole conversation, you obviously went to London and you went into Rio. And now obviously Tokyo, we're not there, but we hear it's also very different. Can you talk about the differences that you saw between the London games and the Rio games?
Yeah, so I would say the primary difference was there was no controversy surrounding it. Like it was almost the last perfect games. It was, the Village was done in an orderly fashion. All of the venues were on point. The railway system, transportation were great. Safety was not an issue. And it was just in a great city. Rio was a great city as well, but things were far apart. It was long traveling distances between venues. I remember when we were on our way there, they were like, man, this place is not even done. U.S. delegation had to send contractors in the Village. Zika was an issue. People were afraid of getting this virus from mosquitoes in the area. And ultimately, they had displaced a lot of local residents in Rio in order to build these venues. There was just a ton of just like distrust for the government, corruption, all of these issues that were at hand at the time. So it just kind of marred the event a little bit for us because we want to be in a place where we feel welcome and we feel wanted.
Right.
Europe, wrestling's huge. I'm sure fencing's huge.
Same. Yep.
So, but not in South America, right? No one cares about wrestling in South America. So our venue was relatively empty. Like there weren't a ton of fans there. Where in London, the opposite, it was packed, it was sold out. You couldn't get tickets there.
Interesting.
So it was different. It was different. And now in Tokyo, they have no bands.
Right.
So we're like, you're training the wrong way, right? We're going backwards. Yeah. So, you know, it's a bummer because wrestling's huge in Japan. Professional wrestling, sumo wrestling, and then what we do, freestyle and Greco-Roman wrestling. So I was hoping that this would be the year that would really showcase our sport. And now it's kind of a bummer the way things have transpired. But hopefully with the Olympic Games being in Paris, another major city next year, or excuse me, in 2024, it will be on point. And then if not, so LA in 2028 for sure. I got to imagine that would be a good one.
You would hope. But I heard from across the bar for all the sports in Brazil, they were struggling to sell out stadiums, which makes sense. I mean, you know, it's not a wealthy country, so people struggle to make ends meet on a regular basis. So why is someone going to be spending money to be going to an Olympics? That makes sense. But I heard London lost an absurd amount of money hosting theirs.
No one wants it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I also understand as well, like, after this pandemic, like, Japan lost so much money. It was such a headache for them. No one in Japan, when they were voting, I think, like, 90% of the population doesn't even want, like, didn't want London to happen. They're protesting outside. So, I mean, I get it. I understand.
So, I just saw Australia, Brisbane, Australia, got the bid for 2032.
Oh, wow.
With no competitors. Like, they said no one else wanted it. They got it. Primarily because they were the only country and city
that
hosted the games. It's just such a drain on the economy area, which you would think it would be the opposite, right? Like, but I think you got to build so much infrastructure. That's why LA is going to be special, because they're like, we're going to be efficient here. We already have a venue. We got a great transportation system, excuse me. We got a major airport. Like, we're ready and prepared to facilitate, at least logistically, something like this. But we'll see. It always seems a lot easier when you get the bid than when you're, you know,
right,
tasked with actually prepping for 10 million people.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how they...
But I heard that LA was the only Olympics that did have some kind of profit in general. Like, they said that when they did it last time, they were like, we're not building any additional buildings. We do not need that. We're going to make everything work. So now that they absolutely have everything, they've done Olympics, I'm really curious to see what they can create and how they can profit even more.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, Rio was kind of a mess with transportation. Getting to the Team USA house, a mess.
So far. And like, we had a bunch of events there. Like, some sponsors I had were like, I was with Ralph Lauren and I was with Hershey's and Chobani. So they wanted to all link and do these events at the USA house. We were staying at Lanier. So we're like over an hour away. And
yep.
It wasn't pleasant to like try to get there, be back, train. But we had to leave like freaking 2.5 hours in advance to get to it.
Right. Because God forbid you weren't on Team USA or like Olympic transportation. You were sitting in that traffic. If you were not in the Olympic lane, good luck getting anywhere. I went to Sugarloaf and I spent 4 hours in the car to get back. And it's like a 45-minute drive.
Yeah, that's it. I remember vividly. And no one wanted to leave. No one wanted to be like, yo, let's go out. As you explore the city, you're like, nah, I'm good. Too much driving.
Yeah, such a pain. And then also how dangerous it was. I mean, I didn't have any bad experiences, but I heard some people were driven through favelas. Some people were getting pickpocketed. So I was really grateful that I didn't have that situation. Did you have anything crazy happen?
No, I did not. But I heard some stories of some people getting mugged, stolen from.
Yikes. Well, at least we got lucky. So what I want to talk about was winning Olympic medals. Obviously, not everybody gets to have that experience, let alone not everybody gets to be an Olympian. So for you, so there are situations where, you know, you are the favorite. Everybody expects that you're up there. What was the situation for you? Were you expected to win the medal? Was it a surprise for you?
Yeah. So yeah, it's crazy because, you know, kind of juxtaposing two Olympics for me, I was the favorite in both. One, I was the champ. The other, I wasn't. I had won the world championship the year before both of my Olympics. 2011, I was a world champ. 2015, I was a world champ. So there was big expectations going for me into the event. But in 2012, I think it was my first Olympics. I almost felt like, and we can kind of get into this later, we just talk about the Simone Biles and Chris Bush now.
So right.
I'm a primary focus for athletes in the career. Like, I've always dealt with it, but now I feel like people are more willing to talk about it and be susceptible to it. I think there was stigma surrounding it for such a long time. It's like, this, you give in to to this pressure, this expectation. But I think in my going into 2012, it was my very first Olympic Games. So even though there were expectations, they were still relatively low because my first time. Let's see what I can do here. Right. Kind of naive, you're oblivious to like what this actually is. You're like, damn, this is just so much fun. All these people around are watching me. Let's go for it.
Yeah, you have like those little distractions to keep you from like really overthinking everything. Right. But yeah.
16, I'm the opposite, right? So now I'm overthinking everything. I'm like, man, it's huge. It's big. If I do this, like I'm the second person ever to do this. Like this is gonna change my life forever. And so there's so many different things that you're thinking in comparison to the first time, and it can be overwhelming. And my performance reflected
right
that. Simone's probably would have reflected that had she made the decision to compete. So you know, it's a tricky position that we put ourselves to be heavily scrutinized by the public, because we love to be admired, love to be praised. We also have a difficult time receiving the scrutiny, destructive criticism, and just being, you know, kind of living life under the microscope. Like when you win big, when you fail, and everyone's watching. So that's kind of a difficult position to be in as an athlete. I think that we all have our different ways of handling those situations that we have to confront. But I respect everyone for how they handle it. And I think it's all about personal preference. I've been in some dark places after some big losses and been really excited after some big wins. But I also know that in this time period is where you figure out who's truly on your team, and a lot of self-reflection and yep. To reconsider everything, whether it's mental health, how do you operate there? I think a lot of us, we don't really refine ourselves from a mental awareness space. It's more just like physical performance. Fueling training that naturally you have to be really mentally tough to get through this stuff. So like, oh, well, if you went through 5-week training camp twice a day, then you have to just be really tough, you know. But it's like, well, some people can carry a load and a burden of training, but also there's no pressure. You can't replicate anxiety and training. It's not the same. So really the only time we feel this big pressure is on once every 4 years for this short period of time in this short pocket. And every other time we're just relieved and we're relaxed. And so it can be overwhelming.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, you nailed it with everything that you said. I do agree that people now are actually like willing to talk about it. And I think times have changed a little bit. I think people are slowly starting to understand that we are real human beings and not just like these robotic machines with no feelings, and that like we go out and like this is all easy for us. And I think like these Olympic Games are showing that, because we are, I think all the athletes are, I don't want to say the word weaker, but like it's definitely a lot harder being there without your friends and family. Like yeah. That is our support system. And like, I think that is even more important for us, like at the Olympic Games than ever before, because there is so much pressure and it is so different. And like, I don't know, for fencing, nobody ever cares about our events when it's not Olympic times. Like no one knows we have world championships. No one knows we have competitions. Like that's it. So for us, like when it was at the Olympics, like I remember when we were competing for bronze, like there was cameras in my face. And I just remember like looking like, why do these people care? Like what is going on? So it's definitely an additional thing. But I think the pandemic and the situation that it is in the Olympics now is kind of highlighting the struggles that we have, because we don't have our support system there with us at the actual competition. So I think you're seeing people's reactions more so now than ever before. So I think that's kind of interesting for the public to be seeing. And like me as an Olympian, like watching, I'm like, wait, I don't remember seeing like as many people like break down and like actually have all these emotions. I think we do usually seem more emotionless because we have that support system with us.
And we're isolated too. Like it's a different period now with COVID, where like if you were feeling pressure, you could just take a walk through the Olympic Village. You could go and meet with some of your buddies. You could go hang out at the mall, to a movie, whatever the case. You can do so many different things.
Right.
Now, you're kind of like stuck in your room. All you have is the internet, and you're probably following all the Olympic accounts, following all the other events. You're seeing your friends have terrible performance. You're seeing some of your other friends have great performances that you want to try to replicate. People are talking about you. You know, people are calling you to go. And like, so it's just a very difficult place that you're in, where you're just consistent seeing all of these things about your competition. Like, I'm the type of guy that I don't like to think about competing until it's time.
Same. I'm the same exact way. So I understand.
Family, I want kids, my wife to be around. And I want to just kind of play games, have a good time, and just enjoy the moment. When it's go time, then I'll dial.
Yep.
Focus. But other than that, now you have no choice but to tap in. You just sit twiddling your thumbs in the hotel room because you can't interact with anyone because of protocol. So it's tough.
Yeah, no, it's very different. If I were to not make an Olympic team, this is the one I wouldn't want to be making. Even at the same time, I wish I had the challenge. As you know, as an athlete, it's like, well, I wonder how I would handle it. I want to see it. But it is interesting of just seeing that aspect, and I'm glad kind of the public is seeing that, because it is an additional level, and we are all humans, and having an Olympics is just a different animal than anything else I've ever experienced. And coming into it for the first time, I mean, it can go one of two ways: of you choke and you don't perform, or you're just so like, I don't really know what's going on. Like, I'm going to run around and just do what I need to be doing and have fun. But it's definitely true that the older that I get, the more I overthink every single competition, and I factor in all of the elements, and I have so many more what ifs. When I was younger, like my first year on the senior circuit, I was killing everybody. I didn't care who was who. Like, somebody would be like, oh, they're like Olympic, like bronze medalists from like whatever, 6 months ago. I was like, I don't know what that means. Whatever.
They haven't fought me yet.
Right. Yeah. I was like, yeah, cool.
I'm like, the only reason why this person won is because I'm not there, or I wasn't there.
Right.
Yeah, golly. Like, hindsight's always 20/20. How many events, competitions that in the moment, it just, the weight's so heavy. And you're like, oh my goodness, I wish I could just be anywhere but here. Right. I have to like constantly remind myself, I chose to be here. I wanted this. I trained for this.
I'm so glad you said that, because again, like, we kind of don't really talk about that. Like, a lot of people, I don't know, I feel like people have a hard time admitting to things like this, but I feel that way so often. And I'm like, wait, why am I still doing this? Am I hating this? But I'm like, right. No, I wanted to do this. So I'm so glad somebody else has said that. And I know I'm not alone.
You got to remind yourself, because there's some days where like I'm in the tunnel and I'm like, this is so freaking scary. Like, it's almost like being at the top of, or let's envision, like, and I've never skydived, but I can imagine, you know, the pilot opens up that door and you're just kind of staring out at the edge of the world. You got to jump out of this plane.
Yep.
You paid your money, you got suited up, you got strapped to, you know,
the
chest. You know, so like, you're prepped for this. You wanted this. You drove here this morning. You were all excited. It's easy to say you want to do it when you're at the coffee shop,
right?
Or when you're at practice in Brooklyn and you're comfy, you got your dogs with you and you're hanging out. You know that you're going to go have a nice venti latte after practice. But if you're in the tunnel and there's a Russian standing next to you and they're about to call your name in 2 minutes from now to see the stage, and you know, the match before you has just ended and you know that you're next, there's nothing like that experience. It's so scary. Scary, but it's also thrilling. I think that's why we do it. So trying to find that balance between, do I still want this? Because it's finding the balance between excitement and fear is a difficult balance. And I think I was talking to one of my buddies. He was like, there's no such thing as being fearless. It's like, everyone has fear. Everyone has anxiety, pressure, expectation, butterflies, nervousness. He was like, but there is courage.
Yep.
Like, so you never not be afraid, but you can be more courageous. You can be more brave. You can be willing to go out there and not sabotage your performance based on what you're feeling. You have to control your emotions. Separate and detach your mind from your emotions and your emotions from your performance, and really help. So it's a crazy, crazy task that we take on. It's way more than physical. People ask, how much is mental? How much is physical? It's all mental.
Yeah.
Like, too many people who, I think of all the athletes that you grew up around that were so gifted that no one knows. No one's ever heard of.
Right.
They have the mental fortitude to stay disciplined, to make sacrifices, to take on the workload, and everyone forgot about it.
Right.
It's a tough task. That's why we are who we are. That's why we're verified, and that's why we're in here. That's why and people want to hear from us.
So it's also, I love that you said that, because I was like, one of the first things that I hated hearing from any sports psych of like, well, don't be nervous. I was like, why are we saying that? Like, how do you want me to say like, oh, I can't be nervous? And then at my sports psych, like one of our first few conversations, he's like, no, screw that. You're gonna be nervous. And he's like, because it means that you care. And he's like, you think the girl in front of you isn't nervous? And he's like, you're all nervous. He's like, take that out of the equation. When you feel that coming, just be like, ah, there it is. Like, this is normal. I'm out here. I'm competing. I'm ready. But I mean, when people are like, yeah, no, I just wasn't nervous. I'm like, yeah, BS. Like, you're full of shit. There's no way you can't be nervous. Again, if you care, I get if you're not training and you just show up to a competition because you're like, ah, let's see what happens. Yeah. But if you're out there training, hustling, putting in the money, putting in the time, like saying no to events, not spending time with your friends or family, you're out there, you're nervous. You care, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
And then another thing where you were saying of like, you know, am I still excited? Am I still disappointed? Like, when should I be, you know, should I still be doing this? I was talking to Lindsay Vonn about this. And I think this is like a huge reason why some people will stay longer than they should, but it's an addiction. I'm 100% addicted to like going to competitions, like that victory. And I live for that feeling. And I think it's different in like combat sports because you're in there. Like it is you making those decisions. Yes, of course you can't do it without a team. Like if you didn't have your friends and family, you didn't have your coach, you didn't have your training partners, of course you can't do it. But it's still ultimately you in those moments, making those decisions, making those calls. And when you win there, I have not found anything that comes remotely close to how I feel after a win, regardless how big or small, but like the bigger, obviously the more adrenaline and feeling that I'm having, but nothing compares to that.
Yeah. That's special. Like, I mean, that's why we do it. That's why, outside of all the external motivators, all the cool stuff that you get from being a competitor at a high level, big stuff, that feeling of satisfaction that you get from breaking your opponent's will, getting your hand raised, there's nothing more. Like, so
no.
I think that's the pursuit, that's the chase, is that we always feel that. And particularly because and I talked about this a few weeks ago with someone, and most people at our age are transitioning to what they're going to do for the rest of their lives.
Right.
We transition out of what we've done our entire lives.
Yep.
Such a different position that we're in as early 30s, done our sports since we were kids, learned to love it so much. We're in this phase where sometimes I think, well, damn, is there anything I'll ever love as much as wrestling?
Yep.
As much
feel
as
that.
Like the buzz when I walk into the arena, all eyeballs turn to whatever mat that I'm on. I want to see me. I want to see what I have, what I'm capable of. Do I still have? And, you know, I think there's other ways that you can find victory and other things, but it just may never sink. So I think that's why we stick around.
Yep.
This is what we've known. This is what we're best at. Like, there's one thing in the world that's say, what are you best at? Wrestling.
Yeah.
Not a single question about it. So I want to do it as absolutely as long as I can.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. And it's obviously very, very difficult. And so many people struggle, you know, when they do finally decide to leave.
Yep.
But like, I mean, we are the best at what we at this. Like, and then we retire and we go off into the big world where, I mean, it'll always be cool to people, but they're like, all right, cool, you did that. But like, what are you going to do next? And you go out and you're like, wait, I'm kind of just, I feel like I'm in kindergarten again. And everybody else is like a senior in high school and no one really just cares about what I've done. So it's like,
yeah, it's over. It's not over. Like, we'll always be respected, but like, what you're
that's
done,
how it feels. Yeah.
You never have the same amount of pool of significance, or at least within your sport, as you
can.
So there's always someone new.
Right.
There's someone out there. There's some 14-year-old girl out there in some part of the city that you've never heard of that is practicing right now.
Yeah.
That's in the Olympics 10 years from now. And everyone's like, oh my goodness, she's the next.
Yeah, you hear that all the time.
And so I think, and as cool as you will be, like, but oh, JB, yeah, he was a beast back in the day, but that's new kid.
Yep.
It's awesome. So, like, you know, I think you try to write your place in history as much as you can, and after you do as much cool stuff. I always have the thought process that my best days are still ahead of me, whatever that looks like. So whether that's winning more championships in sport wrestling, whether that's going on to coach someone else to do that, that's leading my kids to a path of success in athletics, whatever they try to choose to pursue. I think, every person has a season for which victory will occur. And I think that there's victories and other things outside of just the craft that we originally chose. But it's not really easy. It's not going to be easy. It's like, give it up. You always feel tied to it. Like, man, I can remember when I was, you know.
But it's also different because people are on their couches doing the same thing, but they can't do that. But we actually have a chance.
Yeah, the critics are like, yeah, they can't do it. That's why they talk about it, you know?
Right. But it's, I'm glad you have that healthy mentality, which like, I'm not surprised by, but because it is difficult, as we're saying, but having that outlook of, again, it's not going to be the same thing that we're doing, but, you know, always have to remember that we did accomplish what we did accomplish, and that's not everybody gets to do that. And now we get to move on to in the world, and we have new challenges that we're going to face tackle the same way. Like, my thing is always like, no matter what I'm doing, no matter how difficult it is, I'm like, can't be as difficult as walking out on the Olympic stage to win a medal. And I was an alternate, so I hadn't competed the entire day. And the first time that I went out was during the bronze medal match. ridiculous. So if I could handle that, I don't even care what the world throws at me. I can do anything.
Yeah, for sure. That's incredible. And that takes a lot of heart, a lot of courage.
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome at first because I kind of what we're saying of like, we don't really understand it. We don't think about it. So at least for me, when I was going out, when they told me beforehand that like the coach was like, well, you're going to go out and you're going to fence. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. And he's like, no, but like warm up really well and be ready. And that's kind of, when I was like, are we sure that I want to do this? Are we sure that I want to fence? Like, maybe I shouldn't be fencing. But then I was like, no. Like, we need to reconfigure all this. And then I kind of just decided of, I have one match and I just need to go win that match as fast as I can. So I don't understand what's going on around me. The quicker I'm out of there, the better for me and everybody else. And I was like, so, you know, you go through and you try to normalize it as best as you can in this new environment of like, okay, I fenced this girl before. Like the only difference here is that everybody's watching. We're not going to really think about how many more people are watching than normal. So I went out and I was doing it. I was winning. I think I was up 4-1 and then one of my cords snapped. So then, I mean, it feels like they were working on me for like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But they came over to fix it. And I think it was like 2 seconds. And in that time frame, time slowed down. Mm-hmm. And I looked around the venue. And I was like, holy shit, I'm at the Olympics. Cameras everywhere. Everybody's watching me. What if I blow this? Oh my God. And then I went back out and I lost like, we had a lead. Thank God. But I lost like 7 points and I just needed one. At that point, like everyone was screaming, like just one more. And I was like, you're right. Like, let's slow this down. I need one more point. Let me get off.
Yeah. Especially you guys are a lot like us. Like your practices are like isolation.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes it's just you on the strip with another partner and empty, or maybe in some grungy basement or, you know, singular room. So that's how it is for us. So when there's a big crowd, you kind of try to put yourself just in this, like nothing outside of this circle happens. But when you have those moments for us, whether it's an injury time, blood time, something, just kind of peer around the crowd and you see all the cameras and it's just like, damn, this is big time. I think so.
Yeah. I mean, you also train at athletic club, right? So you're in the same facility or same room as fencing is anyway.
I've seen those guys fencing there a bunch of times.
Yeah, I've been there a few times, but that's not my fencing club. All right. So walk us through the day that you won the Olympics of, you know, like what your thoughts were, what you remember. I mean, I'm sure like me, you remember every detail.
Yeah, it was a good day. I think at that time I was still so young, so I really didn't feel a lot. I felt I was nervous. I was like shaking nervous
before right.
starting. But once you get that first match under your belt, like you feel good about the direction and momentum you have going to the game. Luckily, I had a relatively good draw. So I had Puerto Rico my first match. Okay, Puerto Rico's decent, but I was named Puerto Rico. So it was a good warm-up match for me. Went out, was dominant. My next match, I had Canada. A guy who was solid. I watched him wrestle growing up as a kid. He was 3 years older than I was. And I beat him. But then in the semifinals, I had the Russian. The Russian was a two-time world champion. And I had beaten him in the world championships the year before. So he had waited an entire year to get a chance back. And we were our match was so long that we were the very last match of the round. So everyone in the arena was sticking around to watch our match. And we were the only, so there's typically 3 mats wrestling all at the same time, but because our match was a battle back and forth and went all 3 rounds, we were the last match of that actual session.
So you had all eyes on you.
All eyes on us.
Those are the scariest. We have the same thing when it comes to fencing. We have like 4 matches at the time. And when you're the last match, like starting or like even if you're the last one finishing, everybody is there. I remember all those moments and of like, turn, you're like fencing, you're like in the zone, you're kind of turning around. You're like, oh shit.
But it was good. So I remember that won a really close match against him. And I remember after that, knowing that I was going to the finals. Was like so cool. So he was the hardest guy in the weight. So I knew if I could beat him, I could beat anyone. So when I beat him, I was like, I'm in the finals of the Olympics. I'm going for a gold medal later today. And I get time to refocus. You know, right. Like, when you got to do something right away, like sometimes you're like overthinking it. But I knew I could go back to my hotel, like shower, I relax, and I could, you know, kind of ease my mind as I was in my own thing, feel a lot better. So I remember getting back to the arena, and there was, I started feeling like amplified pressure. I'm like, there's a big difference between a gold and silver. You know, I'm like, I want this gold medal, though. Like, I want the gold medal. And then luckily, the guy I was wrestling in the final was the same guy that had beaten the final of the world championships before. So I knew I could beat him. The coolest part for me was after I won, I remember going in the back. So I ran up to the stands, hugged my family, ran back down, did an interview, and then you go in the back and you immediately put your podium outfit on. And so you're putting, and I don't know if you remember back in 2012, the podium outfit was like this orange, like Carhartt jacket. Like,
yeah.
And so I'm in a full sweat, literally 5 minutes after my match. I'm like, trying to put these jeans on, get my podium outfit on. I run out, get on the podium, and I had never even seen a gold medal. So,
right.
And so that was pretty. And then you just go, I remember afterwards, they're like, okay, well, what do you want to do? And my wife now, Lauren, who's just my girlfriend at the time, you know, I'm like, she's like, okay, I'll stay back. You just take your mom and sister. So my mom and sister came back, and like, out my goals, pop buses, did all these shows that night. Yeah, it was really special. It was a fun day.
It's really nice seeing your eyes light up when you go back into that moment.
Yeah,
I think that happens to all of us.
It's like, there's nothing like it. Like you say, when you put so much work in, it actually works out. Like, there's so many days now. And at that time, I had never lost on the senior level. Like, I was still undefeated on the senior level now, you know, 10 years later. I've lost a lot, and I've lost a really big moment. So, you know, you felt both. At that point, you're just like, I don't even know what losing feels like. So I never want to experience it. And I may never if I keep competing. But now you've felt that, well, not necessarily a walk of shame, but like that just lonely, dark walk, leaving and creating and sneak up.
It's such a different feeling. And then like understanding both of them is just wild. Like now I don't know if I ever stop to think about the difference in them and how it feels. Like you just feel it and you're like, I'm the worst. I hate my life. Like, how could I lose whatever? I'm such an embarrassment. Everybody hates me. But like, I never stopped to think about how polar opposite.
It's a 1 second thing for you.
Yep.
Right. Let's say you're tied up and the last person that scored wins. Is that possible? Or do you have to
fight? Yeah.
So last person that scored wins and you get her and like, you're like, super, you're so happy, you're the champ, everyone loves you, or she gets you, and then all of a sudden, the rest, everything changes.
It's like 1 millisecond of a difference.
Singular, like, moment.
Yeah.
It's wild that that's how we define ourselves. It's like, there's really no difference between winning and losing except the way that people treat you.
Yep.
Because there's sometimes, like, there's been some times where you like you really perform well and you leave it all out there and you're exhausted and you think what you felt were the right way, but someone just had a better day than you. So I mean it's quite possible, but there's a lot of questions. So it's a tough place to be sometimes.
Yeah. I kind of hate those days the most because I want to always know how I can improve. So when I'm like, no, I did, like I made the right decisions, like I felt really good. But like, there was just nothing I can do in like today to beat her. Like she literally had an answer for everything that I was doing. And like, I don't know even like how much more different I could have really been because like my ideas were good and they were the right decisions, but like it didn't work. So I'm like, what do I do differently? Like, how can I improve? I need something. So I just like walk around to everybody. I'm like, if you were me, what would you change? People are like, no, you did great. I'm like, damn it. Like, this is the last thing that I want right now. If I did everything great, why am I not winning? But like, obviously other people are part of the factor. So
you need like coping mechanism, some sort of like stable reason to consciously cling to so you can get through this one.
Yeah.
There's never a time where you're like, oh, this person is better. You can't accept that. Like as a competitor, you can't just like accept that.
Nope.
No one's better than me.
Nope.
Yes. Yep. I can't be. And so if I lost, it wasn't because they did something right. It was that I had to have done something.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know. And the crazy part is like a lot of times when you lose, we're like, well, how'd you feel today? And even if you felt great, you're like, I don't know. Like, I guess not great because if I would have felt great, I would have won.
Right.
So it's like a weird.
No, it's always so funny And that's kind of why I wanted to start the podcast of like talking, because again, people look at us like we're emotionless animals. And especially like now, you know, the situation where we didn't qualify, we're here, everybody's out there competing. We know what it's like. We obviously wish we were out there. And I've announced it that I'm not there. And I announced that I don't want to talk about it. But people still are like, oh, I know like the Olympic conversation is off the table, but like watching the Olympics, what do you think? I'm like, I told you I don't want to talk about it. Obviously, it's difficult. Like, how do you... like to us, it feels like a failure, you know, at least initially, then we obviously like have understanding it, do it, but it doesn't feel good. And people are like, still like, oh, she's over it. It doesn't really matter. But nobody really realizes that we're human beings. And I explained to them like, no, like this stings like permanently. And it's my driving force for the next one. But like, it doesn't mean that I want to be talking to random people about it. Like I have feelings and I have a heart. So I think it's been cool to like show people. And when people listen to it, they're like, oh, I never really thought of that aspect of being an athlete. Like, you know, everybody glorifies it like as this amazing experience. And like, we have all these benefits and blah, blah, blah. But like, no one stops to think about like how difficult our day-to-day can be and like how we feel during injuries, you know, like you get injured and like, oh, Jordan sucks, like he's awful, how can he get injured, idiot? But like, no, like the wrong thing can happen, or like somebody steps on their ankle by accident and it's whatever. But like, I think it's been great to normalize athletes and to just make people aware that we are human beings just like everybody else.
Sure, I agree. I think that's key. People just have to respect like that things are hard. Hey, listen, I'm being transparent, but I don't want to talk about it. I feel like a lot of people think that because we're in this prime position that we should always be able to withstand. They can't understand what they can't, or you'll choose not to. And I'm not sure what the public's obsession is with crucifying athletes for any sort of weakness. It's almost like because they've heralded us for such a long period of time, this on this pedestal and made us heroes, any sort of weakness, whether it's infractions with the law, or it's a poor performance, or it's spending all your money, like all these things that everyday individuals go through, but they're not scrutinized for it. They're like, oh yeah, forgive them. But don't forgive them, because they had a team of people around to primarily help them avoid any pitfall things. So this is really weird. Like, it's almost like we live in this bubble, and it's very hard to be ourselves, to truly be vulnerable, to truly be transparent, because we know that we are, people look at us differently. But I'm under the impression, at least what's worked for me, is when you're willing to be truly vulnerable for the public and give yourself, no one can make you feel bad for what you decided. This is my decision.
Yep.
This is what I stand strongly behind. I'm living my truth. There's no way that you can make me feel bad. So say what you want, but it's like, you make fun of yourself.
Almost lost you.
Sit on like this, because then I think it's broken now. Yeah, I'm that shit. All right, I'm good.
That's so funny. That's a great meme. I'll send it to you. You can do what you want with it. You're right with what you're saying of we do get scrutinized. I mean, to a certain extent, I do understand it, because we are idols to children and to people around us. So I think in certain moments, that is why we kind of get a lot more scrutinized than other people. But in the other way, I think people are putting us on this pedestal, like unknowingly, and not really thinking about it again, because I think we're like, they're forgetting that we're human beings. But when there is a moment of humanity, and they just like bring them back down to us, like they need to be us again, like they can't be better than us because they made this mistake that only humans make. So I think maybe that's what's going on in their head. I don't really have any other answer for it.
Of course we can do it, but you can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a weird thing. It's crazy, but it's real. That's how people, or at least in my estimation, view us. So it's not always a bad thing, but you know, it's in moments of weakness, and if you feel like there's no grace that's ever extended to us, it's always it's the hammer every time. So
And again, other factors, like, I don't know if you ever watched the show Ballers, but that was really eye-opening because, I mean, for my sport, like, you're not making millions, even though Google apparently has me listed as my net worth as 1.4 million, which I would love to see that money, but I'm not seeing it. Somewhere out there. But again, we don't really have that experience where you go from like rags to riches. Like my friend was literally he didn't have a belt. He was tying his pants up with shoelaces. And then he signed a first round draft pick deal. And he was pulling in millions and he didn't know what to do with it. And it was interesting to watch that, where, okay, yeah, we do have a team of people that are supposed to be looking out for us, but they're supposed to be looking out for us. It doesn't mean that they're looking out for us. Like, there's a lot of people that only look to themselves and how they can benefit themselves. And they're like, oh, cool, I can screw Jordan out of his money. Like, let me do it. Let me benefit benefit from it. So I think, again, an additional factor to it of, you know, we are these athletes and people come from different situations. Some people don't have money, and then we are successful and we have all these crazy opportunities. Like, I never imagined being on a red carpet, getting introduced, like having Matthew McConaughey introduce himself to me. And like, that's a moment where I can, you know, do something stupid or say something stupid because I'm completely out of my comfort zone. It's some athletes get trained for PR stuff. Some of us do not. And we figure it out and we have to try the best of our abilities to be like, let me think before I speak. But God forbid you say the wrong thing because you're just caught by surprise. And again, you're scrutinized and you're an idiot.
There's so many times that I've been in that situation where I'm meeting someone and I'm nervous, or they're the position that I'm in when I speak to an individual or being introduced to someone, and then after freaking out, you know, that totally did not go the way I wanted to go. I was supposed to be commanding this conversation, and now I feel ridiculous, and that person is probably talking about me right
now. Yeah. But again, we're normal people, and you know, some of us are getting some kind of PR advice and training. Some of us aren't. Some aren't getting nearly enough. Some are better than others. But you know, like, we're in these situations that normal people, like, I would love to see like somebody, some guy off the street, like, you know, being thrown into an interview and being asked these questions and having to be, you know, like, graceful about it, of like the way I always talk about Lolo Jones when she tripped on that hurdle and they come up to her and she had to be, you know, like, I just tripped and I just lost the medal. And like, all you want to do is just curse at the world, at yourself, at everyone around you. But she's like, no, you know, I tripped and congrats to my competitors, and just walk away. You think that's easy? Absolutely not. That's going to be so difficult to do. But, and again, not everybody can do it. She handled it well. Some people don't. And it is what it is.
Yeah, it's good. We've learned most athletes have very good emotional control.
Yes.
So, you know, I think we can handle it well. Sometimes we have our first, they'll show the camera in our faces where we're like, ah, we're good, not bad enough. But I think most of us, we've gotten the positions that we're in and able to control our emotions really well, kind of compartmentalize what we're feeling.
Yeah, that definitely helps. You're right. Whenever I talk about it, I'm like, how do we sort of like make it as athletes? Like, we do have so many layers to this shit that we're doing.
Yeah, you gotta ignore critics. One, critics, trolls, negativity. Like, I just ignore it. Like, seriously, like, when someone posts something negative, I delete the comment and I block. And they can never post any sort of negativity on my page.
And it's funny because, like, I can't even imagine, like, what negative thing people are saying about you. Like, you have always been, the, like, one of the nicest people I've, like, encountered. And so baffles me. But, I mean, people will always find something to hate on somebody else.
I think, I mean, I try to treat sport as if I treat interacting with the people that I desire to be around, creating a circle of people that I trust, ignoring negativity, embracing positive thoughts, reinforcing and encouraging, trying to pour into people around me, and then also just having a good time as much as possible. But, you know, being dialed in and focused, trying to really do stuff. The more we can engage, trying to make our lives as cool as possible, but also understanding that we can embrace hard things and we can do really difficult stuff. It will just help us improve athletically and just,
All right. Well, I appreciate this so much. I think this was a great conversation. I think it opened people's eyes. It reminded me of what we go through, and I kind of appreciate my circle of amazing athletes and amazing people like yourself.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for hanging out.
Always.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.